So, Peter, are you ready to talk about the famous British comedy In the Loop?
You bitch.
Welcome to the Table, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Kyle Lira, and today we have a double feature for you guys, as per usual. We have a British comedy In the Loop for you that I recommended to Peter, and then Peter recommended to me the Robert Rodriguez cult classic El Mariachi. So, welcome to the Table, where we talk movies and shit. Yeah.
That is what we talk about. Nothing else.
It is a program where we talk about film, and we exchange a film to one another. We literally bring a film to the table, and we discuss the movies that we recommend to each other. As we said before, it is In the Loop, and we did El Mariachi, two starkly different films from each other.
Very different, yes.
As per usual, I'm going to give Peter the floor on In the Loop. I recommended this movie to him because I thought the movie was hilarious, and I think that it comes from the mind of Armando Iannucci, who kind of kickstarted a TV show called Veep. So there's little bits of political comedy, and you could clearly see that from Veep and all that, and you get to see a great performance from Mr. Peter Capaldi.
Can we start right there?
And Peter Capaldi is amazing. This is a movie based on a TV show called To the Thick of It. Anyway, I'm not gonna talk anymore. I'm gonna leave all the talking to you, Peter, because I can't wait to hear what you thought of In the Loop. Go.
First of all,
yeah,
I'm throwing this out there right now. Uh-huh. The only reason you saw this film was because of Peter Capaldi.
No.
Yes.
No. What makes you think that, Peter?
Because you don't give a shit about political. You still have not finished House of Cards. You still have not. If they had cast Peter Capaldi as Frank Underwood, you would have seen that show twice over by now.
That would have been glorious.
No, it would not have been.
You saw a little bit of Peter Capaldi's acting chops and all that. So, tell me, what did you think of In the Loop?
It was unbelievably British. So British. I thought it was going to give me an accent. And it seems people really loved it, because I looked it up. It has like a 94, and it's like, this is an amazing comedy. I did like it. I do think that it was funny. I thought it was very, very well written, mainly because the way they navigate all of the political bullshit, they do it really well, and what appears to be really realistically. Like I said, the biggest issue is maybe that I'm not British, because a lot of the humor, a lot of it was maybe too dry for me. Uh-huh. And then just a lot of the things they said, I was like, wait, what did they say? But then boom, it would cut to the next thing. And I was like,
so
okay, what?
So it was too quick for you and it was too dry.
Not too dry. I can deal with it dry, but it's just like a lot of the jokes, maybe I just didn't get, and I'm like, maybe it's a cultural thing. Like, let's put it this way. I love The Office, the American version of The Office. I think it's amazing. I love it. Totally funny.
However,
I tried watching the British version of The Office.
Yeah.
And I found it kind of boring. Like, I kind of got bored. Like, it was so dry. Like, unbelievably dry. And, like, it's the same thing where it's, like, they have these really thick accents.
Well,
and it's like,
that's kind of the gist of British comedy. They're pretty much the pioneers of dry comedy. I mean, you look at Monty Python and all that
but
stuff.
But I can laugh at Monty Python. Like, I can laugh a lot at that. Edgar Wright, you know, his comedy films, his that are very British too, I think are hilarious, and I think they're very well done. I just, much like I think American comedies go too far sometimes, I think English comedies can do the same and go too far. That being said, though, I don't think this was one of them. I think it was just more of a
preferential thing.
See, and that's the most difficult thing. The most difficult films, I think, to make are comedies, because comedy is just so subjective. The things that make you laugh just change by age, by region, by everything, really. And I think that's why you look at like classic comedies. There's not as many when you compare it to any other genre, because it's so difficult to create something that can keep people laughing, you know, decades after it came out. You know, humor just changes. And
it's kind of like the evolution of humor, you know.
But I think that's different when you compare it to something to a drama or horror or romance, you know. Those always, you know, love doesn't change much. The things that scare us don't change much. What we consider to be drama doesn't change much. Mm. But, I mean, those same aspects are still the things that you would find in like, something like the Bible, you know? But things that made people laugh during the time that they wrote the Bible would just make no sense to us. We would just play, like, okay, I guess, you know, it wouldn't make us laugh. So I guess my whole thing is, like, there was quite a bit that I did find very funny. And, yes, here you go. So you can go, it's on recording, make it your voicemail or whatever. Peter Capaldi did do a great job. And the best part, maybe, is because he had the most life into it with the movie. It's just him going off and saying the most horrible things he can to people. And I think it's just funny because they're in this office type.
Lesson number one, I tell you to fuck off, and what do you do? I F off? Very good, you'll go far. Now fuck off.
Yeah, like that, to me, that's absolutely hilarious. Like, that's funny. But it was just so deep into, like, the political intrigue of it.
And it's quite funny because he's had three performances as different varieties of the term doctor. He played he played the Who doctor in World War Z. He was in World War Z.
He was in World War Z.
Peter Capaldi was in World War Z.
Where was he?
He's the guy who was in charge of that research facility.
That was him?
That was him. Watch it again.
Okay.
And he's the WHO doctor, World Health Organization doctor. So I'm like, okay, I see what you did there.
And that was before he was Doctor
Who. Yeah, that was 2011, and then he was announced as the doctor in 2012?
Yeah,
13?
Yeah, I think so.
And then he played Doctor Who, and then now he plays a spin doctor named Malcolm Tucker.
In what?
In The Loop, and he plays the same character in a TV show called.
That's what I was gonna ask. Think of it. Is this like a continuation of that show? Does it have any connection to the show? Because it did feel like. It felt like a television show, like, oh, like a. These are characters I should know, or something like that.
The only character that really matters in there is Malcolm Tucker, and that is Peter Capaldi's character, and he's the same character as he is in the BBC con. This is kind of like what happens like after every one of his employees have left.
So this movie takes place after the show?
After the show, yeah.
It does?
Yeah. Okay. But it still stands alone within its own contained story and all that. You don't have to watch the show in order to watch this.
Yeah, I never watched the show.
It's kind of like stepping into a movie called The Office, and it has Ricky Gervais in it, but it has completely different employees in it. It's kind of the same thing. Mm-hmm. It's kind of in that kind of concept. What did you think of Lord Cutler Beckett at his most dumbassness?
I really like that actor, and he was one of the ones that, like, every time he was on screen, it's like, okay, like, he's really funny. Mm-hmm. And I thought he did a really great job. All the actors did a really great job.
Yeah, the late great James Gandolfini in there.
I guess my thing is, I got a little confused as to the motivations for some of the people. Mm-hmm. Like Peter Capaldi's, I wasn't sure exactly what he wanted, and then I guess at the end it's like, oh, he wanted to go to war. And then, yeah, for a lot of characters, I wasn't sure. There was some, like Tony Soprano and the girl, the woman, I think was she a senator or something like that? Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, they're obviously anti-war, and they're trying to steer it away from that, and then they have their secret committee that they're trying to get into that's actually the war committee, and then he accidentally set everything off because he said... War is unforeseeable. Yeah, and I was like, okay. I do think that's kind of funny. Like, just this one little offhand comment just sort of spirals out of control and
much like the real world.
That was another one of my issues. I was like, this is like funny, but it's so tame compared to American politics. Like, because I was having a conversation with this, and it wasn't about, you know, this movie, but it was like House of Cards. Like, if House of Cards had introduced the mooch from what's his name from Trump's cabinet?
Yeah.
They would have, every review would be like, this is ridiculous. They jumped the shark. This is fifth grade writing. But it's reality. It's just so over the top and zany. Reality is right now. To me, I think it's so.
Oh, because in comparison to what's going on in there, it's not as ridiculous as what's going on in real life.
Because there's obviously supposed to be a tinge of ridiculousness. Mm. Like when what's her name came over and she left him a letter, and this made me laugh. It's like, quit being a tit.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah.
What do you mean, quit being a tit?
And then his whole unforeseeable thing.
Yeah.
But then, like, we'll have certain political leaders say 50 million times worse things offhandedly.
Yeah.
And more ridiculous things. And it's just, like, sort of another day. So it's... this is another reason this presidency pisses me off, because it's genuinely ruining
comedy.
It's ruining
political comedy.
Political comedy for me. It really is. Because I remember, I don't know if you ever saw it, the campaign with
Will Ferrell. And Zach Galifianakis.
Yeah, that was the whole thing. They were trying to do politics, but to the extreme, uh-huh. The American version. And that film just seems so tame now. So tame. There's one thing that, like, we haven't gone to yet, but I just sort of feel like eventually we're going to hit there.
What? What happened?
Is Will Ferrell, in order to get back at Zach Galifianakis, he makes a sex tape with his wife and then releases it. And because of that, his poll numbers go up. That's the only thing that is still, like, so ridiculous it hasn't happened yet. But come on.
Dude, I'm surprised Trump hasn't done that.
I'm surprised that has not happened yet. We still gotta get those golden shower tapes.
Because his approval rating is, like, at, like, what, 30% lower?
36, 35.
Yeah, I'm surprised that he hasn't done that to boost up some murmur.
He's a real man's man.
Take what you can.
He wasn't a porno. Did you know that?
Donald Trump?
Yeah. He wasn't doing the dirties, but he appeared in it. Like, I guess he was, like, some character. I think he was, like, a boss, too, in it. I didn't read enough of the article, but I did see, like, pictures of him.
You know what's sad?
That's your president. So, I think it's so funny, like, going from that's reality, and then his whole thing of, like, war is unforeseeable, and then that gets blown into a whole thing.
So what you're saying is that reality is pretty much what downplayed this movie
for
you.
It's hurting political comedies. It's even hurting just political entertainment in general. Like, it's hard to watch House of Cards now.
Because of what's going on.
Yeah,
right
it's
now.
Like, well, this is so tame. But overall, I did like the characters. And it really did just feel sort of like a snapshot of it. Like, because even as the credits roll, it's like things are just keeping on moving. You know, this is just one thing. And obviously, the whole story was about like going to war, I guess. Was it Iraq?
Yeah.
Yeah, like voting to go to the Iraq war. And it was really interesting. And you could tell politics wise, the. Do their research, really, as to, you know...
How it works,
who are the players.
This is the first time that you really see a British comedy mesh with kind of American...
Because the Americans come into it, too, because of that. And that is funny. I like the whole thing. It's like, they're all so damn young over there. And
yeah, I like how he's like... he goes up... Malcolm Tucker goes to the White House, right? And he talks to, like, the head of committee or something like that. And it's, like, this young kid that's probably our age and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and he's like, oh, you're the head of committee. Yes. He's like... I'm sorry, but you look like you should still be getting your head stuffed down the fucking toilet and stuff like that. He's like, give me a bottle, baby bottle for this kid. Just like little stuff like that. And then how they went on with that. And I like the scene. My favorite scene of that whole thing was the senator. The female senator from in Britain was talking to him on the phone, and he just left the White House all pissed.
Yeah.
And then he was like, "Malcolm, don't you like how I'm telling you what's happening from where you are?" And he's like, "Let me tell you something, you hoity-toity." And then a tourist is like, "Hey, watch your language. Kiss my sweaty balls, you fat fuck." It's just like little stuff like that. It's amazing.
That old British charm. To me, overall, I really enjoyed it. I thought the humor was on point. I thought it was incredibly well written. Just, you know, infuse humor and not do it in a ridiculous way, but a very believable way into these very real situations. The only thing that kept me from being like, oh, yeah, this is a great comedy and I love it, is I think that comedy barrier...
American comedy and a British comedy.
Which is weird, because I always felt I was over that, but maybe I'm not.
Apparently not, because literally, when we were on a messenger, Facebook Messenger, and we were going back and forth, you sent a snapshot of just the logo, BBC, in front of the movie, and you were like, Kyle, you fuck.
Because you knew what you were doing, and then right when you told me you wanted me to see that movie, I was like, oh, it's British, and playing all stupid... Oh, why do you think it's British?
and then you zoomed in on Peter Capaldi's face.
It was literally produced by the BBC. You can't get more British, Kyle. That's why I was like, damn it, Kyle. And the reason I'm like this is because Kyle is the most British man ever to not be British. I think... If he could give his left leg to be British, he would be. Your favorite things are Doctor Who,
Harry Potter.
What's his name? That spy.
Oh, James Bond.
James Bond.
That's my favorite action franchise.
The Queen.
Oh, all hail the Queen, man.
You'll watch The Crown. That's
The Crown.
What it is.
That's an amazing TV show.
You'll watch The Crown, but he won't see House of Cards.
Fuck House of Cards.
Exactly. Right now, there are two giant Doctor Who and Harry Potter posters, so I am surrounded.
I only have one Harry Potter poster, but I also have a Harry Potter blanket.
That is true.
Yeah.
So I am... Kyle is just bleeding... Great Britain.
I have a leading man who is British, who's playing an actor.
To be fair,
who's playing an American.
I assume all actors are British until proven not guilty.
Yeah. Don't you, like, say, and, like, every time you mention it, you're like, Britons are taking our jobs.
The Brits! See, that's why I think they accuse the Mexicans of taking jobs. It's the Brits.
It's because they're better actors. I'm sorry. They're better trained. They're better, you know, they better harness the... They harness their craft early enough so we could put them in. Americans have this unorthodox way of acting, and if you want to get them if you want to get the ball rolling right away, this is the reason why Han Solo, Alden Ehrenreich, he's an American. And he's having all these acting problems, or have to have him acting. But you know,
if you are listening to this, I suggest you impose a working ban on all British actors coming to this country.
Oh, dude, you're gonna lose half of Hollywood. You're gonna lose half of Hollywood.
American jobs.
You're gonna lose half of Hollywood.
American acting jobs.
You know what? Maybe that's a good thing, because then all these shitty movies are gonna stop, and they're gonna, like, you know what? We need to refocus our work because we are limited on actors.
Yes.
Maybe that's a good thing. I'll be for that if for that case. But in that case, no. Keep all the Britons in.
Hashtag ban Peter Capaldi.
No, don't you fucking dare. He's a treasure, sir.
He is a Brit.
He's a treasure.
He's taking our jobs.
He's Scottish. That's right.
Oh, there was actually a good joke in the movie where one of the Americans, it was a senator, he called him a Brit.
And he's
Brit.
Like, don't fucking call me
Brit. Don't ever call me British again. And then he was just confused, like, what did I say wrong? And I'm like, yep, that's American. We don't know
We
don't know the difference. Maybe he's like,
I know the difference.
Yeah, because you're British.
I know the difference between an Irish. I know the difference between a Scottish. I know the difference between a British. I know all the difference.
I know the difference between American and everyone else.
Okay, an American trying to play a Brit. Look what happens. Have Dick Van Dyke.
Dick Van Dyke is a treasure.
Worst Cockney accent.
It's not our fault that they have accents.
Well, if Americans could portray, if British could play Americans great, then what's the excuse for Americans then?
Because we speak right.
We speak of the good.
We speak of the good way.
What'd you call Suicide Squad? Suicide Squad?
Are we supposed to be talking about a movie?
Yeah, In the loop.
I think overall, to me,
yeah,
all the acting was really well done, and they did have really good, both British and American actors. Mm-hmm.
Like James Gandolfini, you had the girl from My Girl.
Yeah, that was her. Yeah. I know. I was like, she looks so familiar. And then I googled it. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's her. She's been in other things, too.
She's in Veep,
too. Is she in Veep, too?
She's in Veep and all that stuff. Do you watch Veep?
No. I saw a little bit of it. You know what? You know what I think it is? Huh. I think maybe it's this writer or this creator's sense of humor. Because Veep, I think, is funny, but it's also very...
Dry?
Very dry. It's very subdued.
Yeah.
It's like little funny things here and there. But overall, it's like, I like really ridiculous, stupid shit. That's why Arrested Development is, like, my favorite show of all time. Because it's just so over the top, and just, it I love was. It. But know, no, but yeah, Veep, you know, Veep is really that way, too.
You know, my family, you know, they're in some sort of stasis, you know, in Arrested Development. That's the name of the show. No. Watch Arrested Development, guys. That's the bottom line of this.
All the moving characters were done really well. Maybe I'd have to see it again to fully understand everyone's.
But did you know that a husband and a wife can't be charged for the same crime? Anyway, go on with what you were saying.
No, I think I would have to see it maybe another time to fully understand what everyone's goal is.
Yeah,
because some people I didn't realize until the end, like what's his name, Peter Capaldi,
Malcolm Tucker.
I didn't realize what he was trying to do until the end, when he, like,
a dance mix on YouTube,
when he got rid of the arguments against the war, and he just kept the ones for, because he wanted the war. And then, but I like the way very political, I guess. The way he got rid of, what's his name? Beckett.
Yeah.
By just saying, oh, the wall fell down, you're fired. In reality, it was just to keep him quiet and not to start this whole thing, because if they quit, then it creates this whole political uproar.
The thing is that he did not want to start a war.
Yeah.
But the thing is that Beckett kept on fucking up.
Yeah, he kept messing up.
So he was like, you know what, let's just shift course, let's get this guy fired, mm-hmm. and he won. And that's why I love this scene when he's, like, talking to Beckett, and he's like, I admire you. I admire you so much. And I love how, like just little bits, like, there's this moment where he was talking to, like, the committee. He was like, White Stripes, get out of here. And then Beckett was going to leave. He's like, no, there's only three. And there's only two in the White Stripes.
Yeah. You know?
And just, like, little bits of that, you know. I thought it was very clever.
It was very cleverly written.
I'm very bipartisan because I love...
Bipartisan.
I'm very biased.
Partisan bias, yes.
I just love British stuff and comedies and all that stuff. I love Edgar Wright's British movies.
But see, I love those too. But these are a little just a tad bit too much.
My favorite television program is Doctor Who.
And I get the humor in that one too. So, I don't know. I don't know if it's me or it's
you.
I don't think it is, though. I don't think it's me. I think...
Well, it's 94% on Rotten Tomatoes, so clearly you're wrong.
Obviously. Obviously. No, but...
That's not a jab at anything.
I don't think it's so much the British humor. I think it's just the type of humor of the writer, because he did make the American version of Veep, and everyone... Americans love it. They do. It wins all kinds of awards. What's his name? Our friend Alexis.
Yeah.
He loves Veep.
He's obsessed with Veep.
Yeah. And I think me and him are kind of in the same boat.
It has nothing to do with the political landscape of Veep, though.
It might actually, too. But for me, I'm the same way I see Veep is the same way I sort of see this, where it's like, it's definitely funny, great performances.
Yeah.
But it's maybe a little bit too subdued for me. Just a little bit. But overall, it is a great movie, I think. There. Are you happy?
It is a great film. We have it on. We have it on tape.
You have it on tape. There you go.
All right. So, Peter.
Yes.
Why did you have me watch El Mariachi?
Because I realized that, unbeknownst to me, I guess subconsciously, I'd been giving you a lot of, like, horror movies. Or, like, mm-hmm. messed up movies. So I'm like, let me change it up just slightly. And I really like
and this. And this is kind of so, this is kind of messed up, too.
It's messed up. It's not horror. It's action. I really love sort of, like, The Evil Dead, which is the last one I gave you. This whole thing of an up-and-coming director, you know... Suppose the urban legend, he spent $7,000 to put together and make this film. And, you know, just all the tricks and ways he did to make this
like
film.
Like, he sold, like, blood plasma on point to get the movie running.
And the fact that not only that he's such a young guy with not a lot of money... was able to put together this film, but the fact that the film was so well made,
mm-hmm.
and it was so well made that, you know, an American distributor bought it, cleaned it up, and released it to U.S. audience, and it got, you know, got really big, and it really kickstarted his whole career. And I love movies like that. To me, whenever I think of filmmaking, I think of stories like that. And I also think it's just a really great movie. I really enjoy it. It's low budgetness and all, so that's why I gave it to you to watch.
Where do I begin with this film? Where do I
the
begin?
Beginning.
No, we'll go before the beginning. I liked it.
You liked it?
I liked it. It was a very entertaining film. The opening, I thought it was going to be the guy with the mustache. Mm-hmm. I guess his name is Azul or something like that.
Yeah.
And I thought it was going to be following him and his story, but then it cut to another guy who's kind of benevolent, somebody who's like kind of like an outcast in the story. But he just kind of was kind of thrusted into this, and he's like, as soon as it seems like as soon as I hit this town, you know, my luck began to turn in the most horrible way, and then it did, and then he meets this girl, and then he's like, you know what, maybe it's not so bad, but then it turns out it was that bad, and he has this remarkable talent at you know, playing the guitar and all that mariachi. Stuff, and mariachi. All I want to do is just be, you know, I was blissfully surprised that this entire movie was in Spanish.
Yeah, well, it was supposed to be a Mexican film. It was supposed to be released, I think, only in Mexico. Mm-hmm. But that's when an American film distributed you. I can't remember which one did. Probably if you look at the box over there.
Probably say. Miramax.
I think it was Miramax.
He has a history with Miramax.
And then it got a whole and then following
he,
in
then
the
he
U.S.
made the American... He made a...
The American version,
he,
I guess.
He made a Desperado, and I was also thrown off because Desperado... El Mariachi is played by Antonio Banderas versus the other guy, and I was like, I would have preferred it if they would have kept it within the continuity, because they hired Moco, and they hired the girl for like the flashback scene in Desperado, and so I'm like, okay, why couldn't you have hired the same actor? That would have been probably his big break, you know, here in America, but...
He was actually in the film.
He was.
Yeah, you know, in the big climax when he brings all his buddies back in, and they all have their own suit cases that look like guitar cases, but they're actually weapons. One of them was actually the original mariachi in El Mariachi.
Why didn't they freaking do it? That makes no freaking sense.
It was a cameo.
Anyway, I digress. Going back to El Mariachi here, I really love the low budgetness of this
film.
Isn't
it great?
It is a true testament on what you can do with the penny and dime budget
and a vision.
I definitely see a lot of stuff that he's learned with this movie that he uses in like modern movies. I really like he has this certain kind of color grading that he has in all his movies, minus what's it called, Sin City, has a completely different color grading. But other than that, all of his movies are, you know, are filmed with the same color grading and all that stuff. I thought a lot of the actors did good, especially the lead who played El Mariachi. He was pretty cool. You felt for him when shit starts hitting the fan, and
it's not his fault.
Yeah, it's not his fault.
He just into this.
But then you think that, you know, he was gonna be let go and all that stuff but then it turns out that the girl that he's pining over was El Moco's girl. Mm-hmm. So then I'm like, oh shit, here we go. And he's like, you let him touch you, you know, after all I've done for you and all that stuff. And I was looking at doing a little research on the movie, and it turns out that actor didn't speak a lick of Spanish.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I'm like, you know what? That's pretty good. I would have thought that, you know, you did, but you know, the lead actress did a good job, Consuela something. I don't know. I'm not gonna butcher any names. Because this is a gringo reviewing this.
Half gringo.
More gringo than anything. I just thought that this is a really good... This is indie film done well, you know, and that's what I could... You know, I definitely see some passion made with this movie, because, you know, you could tell that this... that Robert Rodriguez wanted to make this movie for a long time and had this story, you know, brewing. I could definitely tell that with watching that. And it's a miracle that he made it, you know, and especially for the lengths that he had to do to make the movie. I thought this was pretty good. Robert Rodriguez movies, of course. A lot of other Robert Rodriguez movies I like. I love the Spy Kid, the first two Spy Kids movies.
I like the first one.
What rubs you the wrong way about the second one?
They progressively get dumber and dumber.
I think
the first one has that perfect mix
of stupid. Like
the weirdness, and it has that charm. It has that perfect mix to make it charming. And I think it goes too far in the second, then it goes even farther in the third, and then the fourth is just... it's just gone. It's in the stratosphere.
You have the T-1000 as the main villain in Spy Kids, and you have Terry Hatcher and all this, and then you have Antonio Banderas in there, his lucky charm, I guess.
Yeah.
So we
Machete,
the Elastic Wonder. I didn't see any familiar faces in El Mariachi that he regularly uses.
No. Those were all like either non-actors or just like really, like low budget actors that he could pay with whatever he had. All did really well though.
I like how the villain Moco gets the match and strikes it against his right hand man, and that's how he lights his cigarettes and stuff like that. It's just like. Stylistically pleasing for cheaper than dirt budget. and it to me, this proves and shows like you don't need all this glitzy shit
to make a good movie,
you know. All you need is a vision, the talent to do it, and just the right people who want to help you succeed with this vision, and that's pretty much what you got with this.
Which do you think was better, El Mariachi or Desperado?
I have not finished Desperado.
Oh, okay.
I was halfway done with it, and then I was starting to get dizzy, doozy, and so I was like, yeah, I'll finish it later. But for what I saw, I was like, this is a starkly different film than what El Mariachi was. El Mariachi, I was like, okay, where does it connect to? Because I know that this is a trilogy. How does it connect to the other ones? Where the hell is Salma Hayek in El Mariachi? Just stuff like that. And then I saw Desperado, and it's a very, very different... in terms of, like, film, like, how he filmed it, it's different. It's mostly in English.
Yeah.
You have the freaking snakiest of snakes, Steve Buscemi, in there. And so I'm like, oh, there's where you are.
Did you get to the point where Quentin Tarantino's in there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, Quentin! It's Quentin! And I'm like, oh, you guys are buddies.
Yeah.
It's delightful. And then he had him direct, like, a scene or two in Sin City. He's like, mm-hmm. You know, like, come on, let's, you know, go behind the camera, direct a few scenes. It's like, okay, let me do my thing, and then... Yeah, you definitely see his friend. He's kind of like the indie film equivalent of Scorsese, you know, because Scorsese always hires like the same people, like Pesci.
Well, I feel like a lot of directors do that.
Like his favorites.
A lot of directors just have their favorites, their go-to people, because it becomes so much easier to get a film done.
Kevin Smith, he usually hires, you know, all the regular people. Well,
Christopher Nolan, Spielberg, you could basically name every director.
Mostly with Spielberg, the dynamic that you have is John Williams.
Tom Hanks. I think these last few years he's been really
Tom Hanks heavy. Hanks.
Yeah.
Especially with the new one that he's doing with Meryl Streep.
Yeah.
About something Cold War related, which we know Alexis Soto is gonna be gushing over it.
He's gonna get 5 stars.
And he's gonna be rooting for it at the Oscars. And then lo and behold, Oscar season comes and
it's gonna go to Wonder Woman.
Oh, God. Do you want to know how to crush his soul? Academy Awards just say the best picture is Wonder Woman. Crush his soul right there.
I think he'll kill someone, maybe. I think that might happen.
That'll be his breaking point.
Any negatives? I know it's kind of difficult to find a negative because it's very low budget.
I think you should judge it on the same terms. On how short the film was.
Well, yeah,
because it was like an hour and 10 minutes.
Well, you forget. I think films before the 2000s used to be much shorter. A regular film like was an hour and a half. That was average time. I think average film time has kicked up to like 2 hours.
No, because you had some movies like James Bond, all of them ran for 2 hours and stuff like that. I mean,
I'm saying average. Those are British films. British time is different than American time.
True. They go to like, what time is it? It's 13 o'clock, you know, and
they can't count.
And all that stuff, because we go by a more Gregorian Aztec.
Oh my gosh! I just realized
what
there is something that connects these two movies.
Oh, what?
Which country is responsible for taking our jobs?
Oh my god!
Mexico or England?
Oh my god! Okay. Okay.
Okay, I thought that was funny.
Well, we're building a wall around, supposedly building a wall around one of those countries.
I think I heard it was England.
Oh my god.
It's gonna float. It's gonna have buoys. It's just gonna, a wall that floats.
We'll swim under it.
Swim under it. They're gonna get their submarines. We know it.
Get your U-boats, mate.
Gotta go to the colonies.
Fish and chips upon the submarine. Oh, this to the table is going south so fast. Oh my god.
South of the border. South of the wall. No, this is one of my...
There was a few camera things that I was like, okay, somebody else is playing it, but then it cut to... Yeah. But it actually cut to the guy actually playing, and I'm like, wait a minute, is he actually playing, or did in the close-up shots, did they hire a different person to play the things? So I was like, okay, what is all that stuff? And that, I guess that's filmmaking trickery, I guess.
You should really watch the making of this film.
Mariachi?
It's so fun. It's so much fun. Cause like you know how they get the what's it called, the guitar cases mixed up.
Mm-hmm.
They only had one black guitar case, and I think they had another. They had two cases, but the other case was like brown, like light brown on the outside. So whenever they would show interior shots, it would be of the case, it would be of the light brown one, but then it would cut to them closing it, and then it would go back, and it would be the black case. And you can even see, like, they'll stop the video, and they'd show, like, they'd show corners, and, like, you could see the brown on the outside and stuff. When El Mariachi, he slides down onto that bus.
Yeah, with, like, the chain thing.
Uh-huh. You could see, I think it was Robert Rodriguez, because you know how the buses have those mirrors?
Mirrors, yeah.
You could see him with the camera right there, because they have an interior shot of him, like, boom. Like,
oh, yeah.
That. And they even show, like, them testing it out in the backyard, because I guess it was one of those, like, where you hang on. And
the, oh, the zip glide
zip things. Glide little things. And they showed them testing it with the actor in his backyard. So it's, I just love these kind of films. And what's so great is that it's a good film. Like, regardless of, you know, the fact that you take into that it was very low budget, done with very little money, with an up and first time director, even you take all of that into account, it's still a really good film.
Mm-hmm.
So again, that just goes to the point that we were making. A good film comes from everywhere, man. It's not about the money. It all relies within
what you can do with art.
You know, movie is an art form. Movie is an art form.
I think it was Picasso or somebody like that, and he had like this quote. It's not about, you know, it doesn't matter how many fancy brushes you have about, mm-hmm. you know, painting. It's all about what you could do with one brush and a canvas. You know,
yeah.
And that's pretty much what he did. He had a camera. He had a blank canvas, and he went after it.
He had plasma. And he went for it, and it's great. And I think Desperado just really shows, like, yeah. It also shows when you give a really talented director money, it can also carry it a little bit farther, not gonna lie.
I love the opening credits of Desperado.
Yes, awesome.
Because it was just Antonio Banderas, you know, on the guitar, and he was like, and that kind of sucks that he can't use his hands to play guitar, because I think that's his curse.
He's that tragic hero.
I'm partial to that, because, you know.
Yeah, I love the guitars.
I love the guitars. I love playing and all that stuff. And I'm like, dude, that sucks. I can't imagine me, you know, something bad happening to my hand and that shit happening. You know, I'd be lost. I'd be like, I guess I could pick up drums or something like
that.
The flute.
but just little things. Like, there was a shot, and I guess this is El Mariachi, it's Desperado, when they're talking about, because in each film, he becomes more and more of a legend. And I think it's Steve Buscemi talking about him, how he, like, shot up this one place. And it's like the light almost touched his face, but then as if it were afraid, it didn't. Like, and you could visually see, like, the light with him, and then boom, it goes back dark as he was, like, walking forward.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It was,
of course, you had to have Cheech Marin in Desperado. He's great.
Once Upon a Time. You've seen Once Upon a Time.
Yeah.
Too, right?
One of the reasons is because I was brushing up on my Johnny Depp filmography.
Of course.
And so I watched it, and I was pleasantly surprised. I was like, this is a pretty cool movie, you know. And then you said, oh, have you seen Desperado? And have you seen El Mariachi? I'm like, no. And then you're like, you've seen Once Upon a Time in Mexico, right? And I'm like, yeah, what's the thing? And then he's like, that's a trilogy. I'm like, what? That's insane. That's it. That's fucking insane. And so then I was like, okay, I gotta go back. And I went way back, and I watched it in full HD Blu-ray quality. I would like to see this El Mariachi again, but on VHS quality.
Damn, there's probably VHSs out there.
Some
of those original releases.
Yeah.
That would be cool.
I could tell that, you know, that it looked beautiful in VHS quality too, because of, like, there's a lot of graininess about it.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, okay, I want to see it in that. I want to see it in the analog kind of audio quality. And so, yeah. I don't know. I've ran out of thought. The engine has stopped.
I will say, like you said, you really like the character, and his sort of transformation into this tragic hero, I think, is really well done. So the villains are very villainy.
Over the top.
Yeah. But I bought into the whole romance between him and, what's her name? I always forgot her name.
Domino, that's her name. Oh, Salma Hayek?
No.
Domino, okay. That's her name.
And, I think really the heart of the film is just watching this guy, he's just a regular guy trying to make it as El Mariachi, and just seeing his world be turned upside down by just walking into the wrong town. And you see, and I think you especially see it in Desperado and what's it called?
Once Upon a Time
is they're almost basically these sort of westerns.
Mm-hmm.
And
Literally, he walked. Literally, they what the Domino that bar she owns is in a saloon, in an old Western saloon, and
it's meant to mirror like those sort of cowboy heroes that just come in and save the day and then sort of drive off into the sunset.
And that's what literally he did at the end. He went onto his motorcycle. And with the dog on the back, and then he drove off to the sunset.
And I can't remember if this is true, but I think I remember correctly that Robert Rodriguez had said that Once Upon a Time in Mexico, that it was sort of mirrored after the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, because you know how like that one, it was a fistful of dollars, and then a few more dollars, and then the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. And the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly became sort of like the story about... It was no longer... Clint Eastwood was no longer really the main character. Mm. It was more of an ensemble with, like, these other characters as well.
Especially the other two.
Yeah, yeah. Like, these three other characters. And you see that happen in Once Upon a Time in Mexico. El Mariachi, he becomes part of this huge ensemble, sort of. And that trilogy, the Man with No Name trilogy, is you can really see its influences.
Is on Robert Rodriguez's work here.
His Mexico trilogy,
What it's called, the Mexico trilogy?
Yeah, that's what he called it, yeah.
I like the production company that he has, Los Hooligans.
Los Hooligans.
Los Hooligans Productions, and I'm like, that's cheeky, I like it.
He's a cheeky guy.
Let's talk Spy Kids.
We're not talking Spy Kids.
My God, I'm not your uncle. Like Cheech Marin is amazing. I like the second one because Mike Judge is the villain, and I love Mike Judge.
Mike Judge is the villain?
Yeah, Mike. You know who Mike Judge is, right?
Yeah,
the creator of King of the Hill. He's the villain. He's the villain in Spy Kids too. Yeah.
That's Mike Judge.
Oh. That's Mike Judge, the guy with the mustache and the bald. That's him? Yeah, that's Mike Judge.
No way.
You could even hear a little bit of Hank Hill, a little bit like the deep condescence, in his voice.
Oh, I gotta see that again.
What's Spike Kids? Spike Kids 2 is blissfully freaking wacky. I love it.
I still think one is that perfect balance.
Yeah, it's a perfect balance, but with two, you freaking have, like, it's completely zany, and I love it.
What about 3D? Game over.
Top 17 movies that are better than Bond. Spy Kids 2.
You know what? I have no idea why it wasn't included.
Those are good. I love this. Salma Hayek, she was in Spy Kids 3, so there, oh, yeah, there you yeah. see a lot. And then Danny Trejo is...
She was in 2 too, wasn't she?
No.
Yeah,
she was mentioned in 2.
Oh, the character was mentioned. She was the wife,
because he's like, wait until Mom hears about it, yeah. And then their mom is Salma Hayek, which I don't get how Mike Judge and Salma Hayek and then their kids look like complete gringos.
You mean like you?
well then,
your final thoughts, sir?
This movie is indie film done right, especially released with Columbia Pictures and shit like that. You definitely see this indie quality about it, but then it's not about all the fancy tech shit and all that stuff. Much like the main lesson in Spy Kids 3 Game Over, the main lesson is that a spy, it doesn't matter about all the gadgets that you have. It's about what you have, intellectually, and so that's what you got with El Mariachi. And it was a blissful ride seeing this man's downfall, and he was kind of thrust into it, and that kind of sucks, but sometimes that's life, you get thrust into situations.
He became a badass hero.
He became a badass hero, but he can't play guitar again, he tried teaching.
That's the sacrifice.
He tried teaching the kid how to play guitar, and his hands were like all shaking and shit like that. He was like Doctor Strange,
Yeah, actually the stories are pretty similar.
Yeah. So anyway, that was this episode of of
To the Table.
Check us out. We have two podcasts coming up for you guys Sunday. We're gonna be limiting the schedule for To the Table, and we're gonna only be releasing them on Fridays. Because Mr. Alexis Soto is very reluctant on seeing a lot of movies. So yes, Alexis, when you're hearing this,
he's not gonna hear this.
I'm throwing you under the bus. So anyway, this is To the Table. Check out our regular podcasts on Sundays and To the Tables on Fridays. I'm Kyle Lira. This is Peter Martinez. Do you have a movie for me to watch next time?
I do.
What movie do you want me to watch next time?
And you really influenced me in picking this film.
Oh, okay. God. Okay.
You decided to share your very British comedy film with me.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to share my very American comedy film with you. Wet Hot American Summer. That is your film.
The Paul Rudd classic.
Yes.
Okay.
Wet Hot American. I think it's still on Netflix, yeah.
Okay. Wait, isn't that like the reboot, though? Like the...
No. They did a show.
Uh-huh.
And then they even released a new, I guess, season, but it's actually a whole new show. Mm. Wet Hot American Summer 10 years later. The show was actually a prequel. The first Netflix show was a prequel to the movie. This one is 10 years from the movie. But just watch the movie. Don't look at the show, just the movie. I do like the show, but this is about the movie. And I'm pretty sure the movie's still on there. So, yeah.
I don't know what movie I'm going to have you watch.
You've
seen so many fucking movies. I'm like, he's probably seen that, though.
Well, just ask me, and I'll let you know.
I'll have you watch a James Bond movie. There.
No!
You have 20 more movies to go.
No.
Yes.
I'm going to watch them all tonight, so you can't make me watch them.
Go watch it all tonight, then. Good luck.
No.
It's a weekend venture.
No.
Start from Dr. No, and then you end on Die Another Day, which I'm going to send you holy water and a rosary with you when you go watch Die Another Day and View to a Kill. All that stuff. So anyway, this is To the Table. Hollywood, and it is Hollywood.